Boker Tov, world.
Boker Tov, we can't see you.
Uh-oh. That's not good. I don't know why you can't see me.
I can see you. We can see you.
Okay, good. I didn't think there was a problem. Oh, Sir Richard. Looks like you're back home.
Not for long. Rolling Stones, gather no more. It's on my way to a lot. before they lock me into the Rover, into the Red Rover.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Okay, I guess I'm not going to get to see my Richie, huh? All right, everybody.
There's not so much going on. Willing, I'll be back for God willing.
There's not much left of him anyway after that haircut, so I don't know. I wouldn't recognize.
I had to do something.
Give Anthony my regards.
All right.
Okay, everybody. Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Vov. And we are in the middle of understanding the interrelationships of the purpose of the building of Mechitzas, the current use of the area of Mechitzas, the issue of the inhabitants of the various Mechitzas, and the interrelationship of networks of Mechitzas and Rishuyos, and how one can affect the other, which was that very central machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, which led us to another question that we began discussing yesterday, and that was how to change the purposefulness of the Mechitza, which of course can only be done so far, can only be done by actually building a new Mechitza, and what would constitute building a new Mechitza, or breaking down enough of it and rebuilding, or building one on top of the other, or one in front of the other, all these issues we discussed. And also the question of what would constitute lessening the area, because if it's less than Beit Satayim, we wouldn't run into any of the problems anyway, because we paskin like Rabbi Akiva, that doesn't need to have a particular use that relates to inhabitation. So today we got up to the bottom of Chof Hei Amud Beis with a really beautiful little story about another one of these Reish Galuta's disasters, where the Reish Galuta, he had himself this beautiful, very large area that was like a orchard, and was definitely not for diur. Now, in the middle of this big thing, which was like very pleasant, they built an area that was built around this beautiful large tree, where there was a minhag in those days that they would sort of put benches and things around a tree, put a little swimming pool there and so on. And the question was that he needed to have his Shabbos Su'udah outdoors. It was a warm day and he was looking forward to making this beautiful Su'udah outside under his big tree. So he needed help in figuring out how to get his stuff out of the house to the tree, and because it wasn't allowed to carry there since it was more than a Beit Satayim. And obviously, on the surface, it won't help to redefine the usage and move out there because Lamaise was bigger than Beit Satayim. And remember that the way we've understood things until now is that just opening a door from your house to the backyard that wasn't previously Ukav Ladira doesn't count, because even though the use has changed, but the purpose of the original Mechitza hasn't changed. That was the new idea that we've met over the past few days. So what happened was, let's just take a look at the story over here inside, and this is four lines up from the bottom. So there was Ahi Abavarneka, Davila Larish Galuta Bubustane. So there's this big, enormous tree with the benches and everything that the Reish Galuta owned that was in the middle of his big orchard. And this is not the type of what we're talking about before, a place that wouldn't be b'mayit, the chotzer, because we're talking about a rechova. And therefore, as we say, trees are not b'mayit a rechova. So it was bigger than Beit Satayim. So he asks Ravuna Bar Chanina, he said, could you do me a favor, please, sir? Do something so that tomorrow I'd be able to have a picnic out there and carry from the kitchen out to the tree. Okay, so Rav Huna does the very simple thing. He takes a bunch of poles that are sharp on the bottom, and he puts them in every three tvachim, so that there's less than three tvachim between the poles. And he builds a pathway from the kitchen door that goes all the way around this tree. And that way, they can't carry in the rest of the orchard, but they could carry at least in that area, and they would be able to have a picnic. Anyway, so Rava comes along and sees what he did. And again, because this Reish Galusa competition, Rava comes along and takes out every single one of those poles and throws them on the ground. And behind him come his two loyal Talmidim, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bereder Rav Yehoshua. They collect these poles to make sure that Rav Huna doesn't get them again and put them back in the ground before Shabbos. They figure if they hide the poles, they'll never get a chance. And they're going to teach him a lesson at making a psak that was a ridiculous psak. So the approach of the Gaonim to this story, which Rashi, even though in the beginning, the whole first part of Rashi ignores, the correct pshat he admits at the end is this pshat that I'm about to tell you. And what happened over here actually was that Rava held a very new approach. And his approach was that, albeit if you open up a back door, you cannot recreate a situation where this thing is called hukaf ledira. But suppose you build a home in the middle of that area. So then the building of the home is certainly as good as putting a new wall around an area where it hadn't been built for a home originally, right? So that's just not a question of redefining usage. That would be, according to Rav, of redefining the mechitza completely, because now there's a house there. So he felt that the truth is that if you are going to be making this tree the kind of area that you're going to eat out in, so then when you planted that tree and you built all of the benches around it, you basically recreated the mechitzas of the bustana anyway. And you don't need any type of tikkun. And therefore, all of this was a bunch of frumkite, as far as they were concerned. There was nothing wrong with carrying in that backyard. And so they threw it out to teach him a lesson. What kind of business is this? Anyway, so the next day, when the Reish Galusa is about to go out and have his picnic, Ravina says to Rava, wait a second. I don't think that's right. Because basically, we have a very similar situation about redefining the way in which a mechitza's purpose, again, please distinguish always between purpose and use. Use means its current use. Purpose means its original construction. Well, we have exactly this kind of situation where we need to make a determination. You will remember this similar sugya in the idea of what is considered to be a city that has a choma when it comes to Kriyas HaMegillah. So the same issue is here. What if the wall is built before the city? So in other words, what you want to do is you want to have a safe area. You build a wall around, and then you start building homes in the city. Now, according to Rava Svara, putting a home in a city should be the equivalent of putting a wall around existing homes. But it isn't. That's the problem. And when it comes to the tchum, there's a tremendous difference if you're in a city where the wall was built and then the city was settled. You cannot take your measure, your 2,000 amot, from the wall. You have to measure your 2,000 amot from inside the last house that was constructed in the city. On the other hand, if you have homes there originally and then you go and build the wall around it, the purpose was for a wall for diur, and then you start your 2,000 amot at a wall. So Ravina pointed out to Rava, so then he's off the wall, because then what he's trying to do is he's trying to say that repurposeful diur, which over here they built actual homes in the city, you said that that's enough to redefine the purpose of the mechitza. Well, obviously it isn't. And therefore, the Reish Galusa is not allowed to carry. He's not going to be able to have his picnic today. So that was the first problem that Rava had to face. Ir Chadasha, Modedina Mishivata, Yishana Mechomata, what defines an Ir Chadasha? An Ir Chadasha is where you first build, you know, in modern terms, you've got like the whole, it's a big project, you put up the wall first, and then you put up the homes. That's not a city that has a wall. An old city means the city had been settled previously, then you build the wall, then you measure from the wall. Now, what's worse is that Rava's own Talmidim, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bereder v'Yoshua, who were so smarty yesterday that they took the poles away and hid them so that they couldn't, they themselves realized, we're up the creek, because Rava's shot was wrong. And each one of them brings another raya against Rava. So Rav Papa comes along and says, wait a minute, even if you're right, you're wrong. Because what you're saying is that this area of the tree with the benches and so on, that that is considered to be a dira? It is definitely not a dira. So even if you're right in theory that if he had built a home there, it might have made a difference, because we have a din about architects. So usually when you have people that are in charge of a project, so even today, you have this little, you know, this little shack that they build, or they bring in a trailer, park it there, and that's the office. You got a little door there, and they go in. The architect sits there, checks over the papers, and so on. So that is called Mechitzot Adar Kalim. It's called the Mechitza that was built for the privacy of the architects and the superintendents. That is not called a mechitza at all in these terms. Why? Because it isn't meant for anything but protecting them from the sun, so they should have a place to sit. So Alma Kimina Letzniuta Avida, it's not a mechitza. Now, what do you think this whole thing is over here that was built with these benches and so on? That's only tsniyuta. Tsniyuta is not a mechitza. It has nothing to do with living. It's just to protect you from the sun or from people looking at you. Therefore, it wouldn't even count. Then the other one who had taken the poles away, which was Rav Huna Bereder of Yeshua, he says to Rava, even if you're right, you're wrong. Because the whole purpose of those mechitzot that were built around the tree, or the area where they wanted to have their picnic, those things were basically a locker room. So what happened is people would sunbathe over there, they would hang their clothes up, and they would lie out on the benches by the tree and so on. So that means that it was a mechitza that was made for the purposes of keeping things in it. It was like, it was just to make sure that their clothes weren't stolen and so on. So that's called a mechitza asuya lenachas. And that's what this is. So again, even if you're right, you're wrong. So Ravina attacked the basic premise of Rava. You cannot repurpose a wall by building a house. And then the two Talmidim attacked the case. That even if you're right, this isn't a house. It is not a house because it's the equivalent of a Adar Kalin, or it's not a house because it's basically a locker room. And the point over there is, even if you say tznius would be considered to be a mechitza, but certainly not where the main purpose is to have lockers that people don't walk off with their clothes. And that's not called. I'll bring you raya to that. Now, this is that little picture that you got over there. A little bit primitive because of the limitations on printing, but I'm assuming we have it in the book. Oh, for heaven's sakes, there's so many pictures here. Oh my gosh. I don't see it. I just don't see it. Okay. I can't believe they don't have it, but I don't see it. So anyway, so take a look at the Rashi. Basically, the case over there was like this. They in Mechuza, okay, they did not have walls. They did not have gates anyway. The area was open. There were big streets that were running through the whole city. Between each street that ran through the city that came outside, there were these different neighborhoods that had chatzeros and everything in them. And each one was isolated. Each one had its own privacy. They were gated communities. Remember that Mechuzah was a very fancy place. And so what happened over there is that Rabba Bar Avuha, he went around to every single neighborhood and insisted that they make a local Eruv. Because what happened is everybody had been relying on these doors that they had put in, and they would close at night. Because they figured, okay, so now we're like a town that's surrounded by a wall. But he said, no, you are not a town surrounded by a wall, because you're so fancy that all along the middle of the streets between the neighborhoods, there's a walkway for your animals. Everybody deposits their date pits there, so that it was a way of recycling date pits. So instead of, obviously, in that area, the date pits would have been a very significant part of the garbage. So they would recycle it for providing it as public animal feed. So what they had is all along the streets, they would have in the middle of the street these little hollowed out areas where there were like a few feet of place where people could just dump their organic garbage. And then the people that were walking along with their animals, with their horses or camels or parrot, would eat from it. So that, he said to them, is not considered to be a real mechitza. Because the only reason that you put up those walls, so to speak, was to prevent people from coming in and making off with this currently valuable animal feed, which means that it's not there as a real mechitza, it's there to protect the garbage dump. In which case, you see from here that when things are just there for protection, they're not considered to be a mechitza. And it's the same thing over here. So if the Peira de Beit Turi are considered to be a mechitza asuya lenachas, right? So then that would mean the same thing that is true over here. They made these places around that beautiful tree and the benches, but that's because it's a sunbathing area and people hang their clothes there, as Rashi says. So people put up, they'll put their pants there. They don't want to come back and find out somebody walked off with it. So meanwhile, all three of the people that had messed up the Resh Galuta in claiming that no, it's much better, and that you can go ahead and you can carry in the whole place. What's he doing over here, Ravuna, with making these little plays for you? Just ridiculous. They ended up telling the Resh Galuta he can't even make his picnic because now he can't get out. So he says, you know, I love you guys. You're so smart when it comes to screwing things up, but you can't use your brains for making things better. That's the pasuk. Chachamim hima lahara. Oh yes, they're very wise when it comes to doing bad things. V'lehetiv lo yado. They can't use their brains. You could have thought of this yesterday, you know, and you could help me have a picnic. Okay, these stories with the Resh Galuta are really, really a riot. Okay, so then we got that last piece in the mission. Remember, there were three things that Rabbi Loi said. I heard from Rabbi Eliezer, and I can't find anybody of his Talmidim that are going to agree with me. So I don't know. There's some kind of machlokas. Okay, so let's first understand. Rabbi Eliezer apparently says that according to Rabbi Loi, that I hold that you don't have a limitation of a Beit Sa'atayim. You can have a Karfaf even the size of a Beit Kur. So that means you could have 30 sa'a. Now, that means that itself is kenega, the only other shita that we have in Rebbe Eliezer, which is Chananya. This part of the mission is not agreeing with Chananya, because Chananya says you could have up to 40 sa'a. Where do we get the idea of 40 sa'a? Well, remember that back in the beginning, in the very first Dapim, we were talking about what our model is for sizes. And so far, we've talked about the model of the gateway to the Heichal, of the gateway of the Ulam. We've talked about the model for area in terms of the Chotzer HaMishkan. But back in the beginning, we suggested that if you hold, you're not limited by the specific models that would be listed in detail, then you could go to the Pesach Shel Milachim. And so what would be a standard Pesach Shel Milachim? And that was one of the shitas that we thought was the explanation Rav Yehuda. Well, over here, we have the same issue. We find that what is the norm in these massive palatial structures like the Taj Mahal and so on that are being made for purposes of government and so on, we find these enormous chatzerot. And that, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is a proper model. Okay, so Hananya said that the shear that Rabbi Eliezer is talking about over here is up to 40 sa. Because that would be Kisrat Yashal Melech. That's like the public yard in front of a palace. Rabbi Yochanan, what's interesting is that Rabbi Eloi Shita and Rabbi Eliezer and Hananya Shita and Rabbi Eliezer both look at the same pasuk. And there's a fabulous historical insight to what was going on over there. You will recall that Chizkiyo HaMelech was suddenly taken ill and he was deathly ill. And Yeshayahu comes to him and tells him, look, I'm sorry to tell you, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you are dead, baby, and you ain't going to live either in Olam Haba. That was the whole story. What's that? What happens? Says Chizkiyahu, well, you didn't have any children. So he says, okay, so let's try now. I'll marry your daughter, you know. No, no, baby, it's too late. You is dead. So Chizkiyahu tells Yeshayahu, okay, have you finished telling me your Nevi'ahs? Yes, thank you. Get the hell out of here. He throws him out. Because I have a Kabbalah. There's no such thing. If a person does tshuva, and it doesn't matter if it's the last minute, everything can change. So he turns towards the wall. That's the famous thing about the Vayifen al-Akir. He davens HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as Yeshayahu is walking out of the palace, he hasn't even gotten out of to the outside, he gets a Nevi'ah that says, go back there and tell him that he's got another 15 years. Okay, so it says over there something very strange, that Yeshayahu had not yet gone out. In the world, he hadn't gone out to the middle courtyard? What is that? And what's even weirder is that in the pasuk, if you look what's written, it doesn't say el ha-chatzer. It says el ha'ir ha-tichona. We, for some reason, are told, don't read that ear, read that as chatzer. So what does that mean? It's a remez that the size of the Yisrat Yashal Melech was the equivalent size to what was a norm for a village in those days. Okay, so then that would mean, what is the size of the norm? That's what they're arguing about. Is a Beit Kur, which is 30 so, and the other one holds, Hananya holds, they're 40 so. But that's what it boils down to. Now, the question is, just historically speaking, what was Yeshayahu doing in the middle courtyard? Because it can't mean the exit. The normal exit, it means the backyard. If it was talking about the normal exit, it would have said the emtsa'it. The tichona implies that it's some type of enclosed area that stays there. What was he doing there? Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Look, what this teaches you is when Chizkiyahu became sick, Yeshayahu took his talmid and sat in the back of the palace, in a rechavah. This is how we know it was a rechavah. That's the point. So you see from here that a rechavah, me'achorei habatim, even though it was lo hukaf ledira, is nonetheless considered to be okay because that's its norm, the size of the ear, right? So why was he in the backyard? Because it teaches us that a Talmud Chacham who gets sick, we bring a yeshiva and set them down next to his door. So in a sense, that protects him from the Malach HaMavis. People are learning, it's a schus for him. And that's what Yeshayahu did. But don't do this at home. Because Dilma Atili, you really be Satan. You do not want to challenge the Malach HaMavis. You try to get in. uh-oh, not a good idea. There's always the chimney, you know, with the guy with the red suit and so on. So there's always ways to get in the house, right? You don't want to start up. So Chizkiyahu, okay, is a tremendous tzaddik. It's not going to be Giruy of the Satan, but certainly don't try this for your local Godel Hador.
So Rebbe, maybe there was something specific here because he had made sure everybody learned. He made a cherev by the door of the Beis Medrash. There's something particular about him.
Yeah, that's a very nice shot. Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, and the next thing that we learned was that a chotzer, now here, let me just break for 30 seconds to give you the background to our next sugya. Here, the next sugya has to do with the concept of bitul rishus. And it serves as usual, the last daf of a perek serves as the introduction to the idea of the next perek. We haven't even started talking about Erevin, believe it or not. All we've talked about is the geometry and the question of the purposefulness of the mechitza, the use of an area, the size of an area, the shape of the area, the question whether it's a chutz or whether it's a moment, nothing to do with Erevin directly. It's just we're defining the rishuyas of Erevin, and we're going to begin Bezrat Hashem tomorrow actually discuss, okay, but how do I make an Erev? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, so we're going to finally get to Erev and Erevin. But of course, in order to introduce that sugya, we need to be aware of the fact that people aser on each other. That was the whole idea. So if you've got different homes that are opening up into a commons, then the commons becomes the equivalent of Rishus HaRabim in terms of diurim vis-a-vis the homes. So you're not allowed to carry out from your house into your front yard because there's other people using the front yard. So that's a public area, right? Makes sense. Okay, so that was the takana of Erevin. Now, the question is like this. Let's say you've got 10 different homes that are opening up into that chatzar. Everybody has got to join the Erev because the whole point of the Erev is that there are no different homes here that are diurin. The chatzar is occupied by people who share the same table. So we're formalizing the concept of it's not appearing to anyone as a commons. It's not a commons. We're all in this together. So we're a club. We're not a commons. Big difference. How about if one guy doesn't join? So if one guy doesn't join, the whole thing is disaster because he ushers on everybody because now it's a commons again. You know, you may have your club on one table, but he's got his family on the other table and that messes it up. Is there a way out of this? So we're going to see later, yes. The way out of it is called bitul rishus. So what he does is he makes a formal declaration to everyone else in the chatzar, gentlemen, I am your guest for Shabbat, and I am not maintaining my rights to this chatzar at all. Now, the question is, he's not maintaining his rights to the chatzar, but he seems to be maintaining his rights to his home. All he's doing is saying, well, I'm not going to go out of my house to the chutzner. It's your place. I consider it to be private. If you invite me out, I'll come out. Okay. So the question that was raised is, does that work to deal with a house separately from the use of the house in the chutzner, or is it too much of an artificial situation? Because houses don't really work as houses if they don't have a chutzner. I mean, you need a place to put your laundry, to hang your laundry, to put out your garbage. I mean, does it make sense to say, I live in a house, but I don't have any access to the outside? Doesn't seem to make sense. Okay, so the question is, what would be the relationship of he himself once he is mevatel his rishus? Now, there's two different questions that we're going to be seeing over here. Can other people carry into his house if he says, you can have my house and my chotzer, I will be your guest. Okay, can other people carry into his house and out of his house and bring their things into it because he gave his house away? Or does that then a bitul rishus only work on the chotzer? And the other question is, what would be the situation for him when he's a guest by everybody else, so to speak, I mean, formally. So he apparently would be able to carry out from their homes into the chatzar, because he's just a guest. Any guest is always allowed to do anything that the Balabait's allowed to do. So the question is, so then by the same token, for all intents and purposes, he now becomes a guest in his own home, right? So if he goes into his own home, he ought to be allowed to carry just as if he had joined the Erev. Now that part is not true. Why? Because it exposes the whole thing as a farce. I am your guest, so could I use that guy's house as my bedroom? You know, and it's his own house, and he's going in there, he's got all of his stuff. Wait a minute. So then that we didn't allow. For him to be mevatel his rishus and then claim that he's a guest in his own home, that he can't do. But other people would be able to carry from his house to there, maybe. So that's the next piece. And this introduces our next parak. And I also heard from him, claims Rabbi Yonai, even though I can't find anybody else that agrees with me, that if somebody forgot and didn't join up with the Erev, his own house is usur for him, and everything else is okay. So he can carry from other people's houses because he's a guest, but he can't go back into his own house. So even though he didn't talk about Bittul Rishus over here, there's no possible way of understanding this statement. I mean, obviously, if somebody didn't join an Erev, nobody's allowed to do anything. So ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. There's a Mishnah later on that says his house is usur for everybody. Nobody's allowed to go in and out of his house carrying anything. And it's usur lo tilachlis lo v'lahen. So how do we explain that if the Mishnah says it's only usur for him, but it's usur for everybody else? Well, this is very simple. I mean, basically, we have two situations, right? Was he being mevatel his house to them, or was he only being mevatel his chutzah to them? That's the question. So basically, our Mishnah is going alibet a Rebbe Eliezer and says he's allowed, other people are allowed to carry in and out of the house. And the Rabbanan hold that, no, you're not allowed to. When you think about this, you figure, oh, I understand what the machlokas is. Kishatim tselomar. Basically, according to Rebbe Eliezer, we're taking for granted that when a guy says, gentlemen, I am no longer considered to be a householder in this chotzer, he doesn't mean he's not going to use the chotzer. He means he's allowing them to take over his rights to his house, to his chotzer, and he will be their guest. So according to Rebbe Eliezer, if he's mevatel his chotzer, he's automatically mevatel his bayit. According to the Rabbanan, if he's mevatel rishus, he's only mevatel rishus of the chotzer, not the rights to his house. Well, I mean, that's pretty obvious that that's the machlokas, isn't it? Says Rechava, I figured out why it's not obvious. And basically, and my chavrusa, Ravuna Bar Chinuna, together we figured out a pshat over here. And the whole point is because there is an implication which you need to understand. And it's the implication that we're pointing to. And that is this. There's a difference. Let's say there's 10 people in the chotzer. This guy, one guy out of 10, okay? Does he, according to Rebbe Eliezer, when he's being mevatel his rishus, we understand that to be a very broad kind of bittul. It's sort of like the guy Nosin Matana is, he gives it with his a lave that's open, right? And he's not being mitzvah. That's the machlokas. Same thing is true over here. According to Rebbe Eliezer, when he gives away his rights, we interpret that very broadly. It means he gave away his home. Okay, so think about the implications of that. It would mean that if he walks over to another guy in the chotzer and he says, I'm going to be your guest for Shabbos, he doesn't mean your guest. He means you in the plural. I am not maintaining my rishos vis-a-vis any of you guys. See, he doesn't have to go to every single member of the chotzer and be mevatel his rishos to them, because we interpret what he says broadly. Basha'in and going to Rabbonan, we're not interpreting it broadly. We're saying, look, he said, I'm mevatel my rishus in the chotzer. That doesn't mean he's mevatel rishus in the house. So the same thing is true. If he goes to his neighbor and he says, I'm mevatel my rishus to you, that's not going to help, because the whole deal of bittul rishus is not to an individual. It's to the chotzers, right? It's to the chotzer in aggregate. And therefore, he would have to go to every single one in the chatzar, tell them he's mevatel rishus, or it's not considered to be bittul rishus at all. according to the Rabbana. Fine. So if the, I mean, you could have claimed that the Bittul Rishus will help, you see, if I gave it to one person, because that person is part of the Eruv. The problem is that once that, if that wasn't done before Shabbos, and he had been part of the Eruv, the part of the Eruv that he was part of did not include that. So the only way that we can actually carry it is if this other guy doesn't exist, so to speak, and he's a guest, not if he just gives over the legal rights to his area. So according to Rabbanu, you have to give it to everybody. Okay, so then we find in the Braita that that's true. If you've got five people in a chotzer when he's mevatel, he doesn't have to be mevatel rishus to everyone. Obviously, going to our interpretation now, an implication of Rabbi Eliezer, who says we broadly interpret what he says. Anyway, that's the way that Rav Kahana said over this whole conversation, which about the Pshita. But Rav Tavyumi, he had a completely different version. I mean, it's the same thing in the end, but according to Rav Tavyumi, the idea was that he actually said this, not as an implication. And then it started off like, let's start from where we got. Kemana Zol D'Tanya, how do we understand the Braita that says five people that are in the Chotzer and one of them forgot he, when he's Mevatel Rishus, he doesn't have to be Mevatel to everyone. In this version, Rav Huna Bar Yehuda says that Rav Shesha said that that is going Aliba to Rav Eliezer. In other words, the implication in the first view is the main statement in the second view. Otherwise, it's exactly the same as far as halacha is concerned. Anyway, I got a problem, and that's this problem is this, says Rav Papa to Abaya. Are we talking about interpretations, or are we talking about some fundamental concept over here? I mean, if we're talking about interpretations of what a guy meant, then you're right. I mean, then the whole thing boils down to broad interpretations or strict interpretations. According to Rav Eliezer, we're saying, well, the guy, when he said it, he meant, you know, I'll be your guest, I'm giving away my house. According to the Rabbanan, he didn't. I mean, if that's the case, if he said anything different, he said, gentlemen, I am giving away my chotzer, but not my house, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Or according to the Rabbanan, he said, gentlemen, you can have my house and my chotzer. If it's a matter of interpretation, there's no longer an issue of interpretation. He said exactly what he meant. And in that case, according to the Rabbanan, if he was mevatel the house, now the Rabbanan would hold what Rabbi Eliezer says. According to Rabbi Eliezer, if he specifically said, I am not giving away my house, then Rabbi Eliezer would come around and told what the Rabbanan said, that nobody's allowed to carry from his house, if it's just a matter of interpretation. Now, but there's another way to understand this. And the other way to understand this is, it's nothing to do with interpretation. It has to do with the fundamental concept. And that would be, does it really make sense to say that someone who owns a chotzer and a house can give away the chotzer part and claim that he's only going to be in a house? Is there such a thing as a house that's a real functional home without access to the outside, that he's allowed to put his mops and brooms and hang his laundry? It doesn't seem reasonable. And therefore, the whole statement is farcical, and we do not accept it. That would be one possibility. Or, you know, it could be that, and if that's the case, maybe that's what it is that Rabbi Eliezer says. The guy has no choice. If he's being mevatel rishus, well, of course he has to give away, you know, the house, because there's no such thing as a house without a chotzer. So then even if he would have said beferish that I'm not giving away my house and I'm going to live in my house without the chotzer, we don't take it seriously. Or it could be that the idea is that they hold, according to the Rabbanan, it could be the other way, that it's a question not of how to interpret it, it's simply because of the fact that it is not a reasonable statement. And for a person to say, I will be your guest, but be in this house, that is exposed as being farcical. And therefore, it wouldn't matter, even if he would say it, I'm being mevatel, the rishus of my house, I'll stay here, but as a guest. I mean, come on. What is that supposed to mean? That's almost as crazy as selling your chametz to a goy before Pesach and pretending it's not yours, you know? So who's going to accept that kind of thing? So because of that, the issue over here would be a fundamental problem. It wouldn't just be a matter of interpretation. That's what I want to know. So Rav Papa Abaye, is it a matter of interpretation or is it a conceptual problem? So Abaye said to him, it's definitely an interpretation issue. Both Rabbanan and Rebbe Eliezer would agree, if he says exactly what he means, we take it at face value, and then Rebbe Eliezer could end up holding the Rabbanan. If the guy said, I'm not giving away my house, Rabbanan could agree with Rebbe Eliezer in terms of halacha. If he says, I definitely am giving away the house, all we're looking at is where he didn't specify what is the din. And the last thing that we had was, you can eat our koblin and be yotze morer on Pesach. What in the world are our koblin? So Reish Lakish says that our koblin are these atzvata that grow around the charuziata. So very often you'll see a palm tree that it's got these vine-like growths around the bottom. That is what our koblin are. And Tosis doesn't like this approach, but this is Rashi's approach. And it's therefore some type of vine that is very bitter, and you could be yotze your chiev of moror. And now I think that we have a Sir Richard still with us, if he isn't already halfway down to Eilat. Hadran alach osin pasin. Uh-oh, I was right. He's not there. Doc, we need you. Richie's put up a wall. That was the use of the Alma.
We need a surrogate.
Sorry, but I'm still not quite, what do you call it?
There we go.
you see, it says? That Mordechai tells Achashverosh, the only thing that's going to get Esther to talk is take another girl. The minute I said, Doc, all of a sudden Richie is here. Look at this.
Okay, wait a second. Are we to a Mishnah, or is this the end of the
parak? Oh my God. This is disastrous. And now Zoom has brilliantly moved Doc right next to you. So that basically, you know, we can just simply turn our eyes, the shift of just an incredibly small shift of like 1 degree, and I'm looking at Doc, you know. You're in big trouble.
The shame of the caught red-handed.
I don't know. Doc, what do you say? You want to give him a Hadron Alakosin Pasim and teach him a lesson? Or you have mercy on him? Okay. Go ahead, Richie, for next time.
Hadron Alak.
Right at the beginning, end of the parak. So Hadron Alakosin Pasim. You could do the next piece.
Fun.
Should I do the perek too?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Perek.
Bechol ma'arvinu mishtatfim chutz min ha'mayim u'min ha'melach. So we're finally getting to the things that you can actually use for your Erev and for your Shituf Mavoz, which we are really ready to hear about. We got very hungry over these past awful lot of pages till we reached the moment that we can discuss the food. Okay, so 25 dafim later, we're ready to discuss Erevin in Erevin. But it was a lot of really exciting, I guess you would call it, I don't know, I guess the infrastructure for Erevin. But we put a lot of work into the infrastructure. Okay, everybody, so I'll see you Bezrat Hashem Yisbarach tomorrow at 8:45. How's that? Good? 8:45. Okie dokie. And Moshe Foreman will instead of having 3 steaks for his Shalosh Shudas, will manage with 2 so he can join us. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Wonderful Shabbat. Robert, I'm not getting any waves over there. I don't know. Things are bad. What's happening? Come on. Okay. Bye-bye.